Meruchim Abayim, gentlemen, we are studying Parashat Miketz. Meruchim Abayim, rabbis, we are studying now Parashat Miketz.
We have some people here too.
Vayhi Miketz shenatayim yamim ufaro cholem vehine omed al hayor. Our parasha begins with the dreams of Paro. Of course, the dreams of Paro are two dreams, one with cows, and then the other with ears of stalks of wheat. Basically, it's the same dream that the thin cows swallow the fat cows, and the weak or thin sheaves swallow the fattened ones. Of course, Paro is disturbed by his dreams, and the pasuk writes ve'en poter otam leFaro, that nobody was able to give Paro an interpretation. The Gemara says no, they gave him an interpretation. It's just it wasn't leFaro. It wasn't the Paro's liking. He didn't accept the interpretation. They told him you're going to have seven daughters, you're going to bury seven daughters, you're going to conquer seven countries, you're going to give back seven countries. And they all didn't make too much sense to him. And then, of course, the Sarah Mashkin comes along and says, wait, I have a brainstorm. There was a kid in jail with us 2 years ago. Nahar. He's a Nahar Ivri. He's a Jewish lad, Eved. And he was a servant to the Tzara Tabahim. And he has a handle on dream interpretation. Agamim come and song and say, the Goyim, even when they do us a favor, they got to do it with a snag. Which means, you know, he had to throw in his snide remarks about Yosef. He didn't say, you know, there's a guy called Yosef in the pit. Instead he says, there's some, some kid. He's a Jew boy, he's not Ivri, Eved, he's not worthy of anything, he's not even worthy of any position. So you can't rely on the green for anything. You have to, where's that Karat HaTov exactly? This is payback. I mean, Yosef interpreted his dream favorably, and the Zohar writes that when the Sadam Mashkim says, Oti Heshiv Al Kani, it says, he returned me to my post. This was really he returned you. Yosef didn't return him, but or returned him to his post. So the Zohar says that no, because Yosef interpreted the dream like that, that becomes the reality. Which means Oti Heshiv, Yosef returned me. So the Tzadam Hashkim is recognizing that it was Yosef's positive interpretation that brought him back to his post. The Oto Tala, and he hung the baker. The Oto Tala, Mi Tala, Yosef Tala. Yosef hung the baker, meaning because of his interpretation, and still he has to do it with the Azdan, you know, he has the zinger there, you know, Evri, Evid, he's got to throw in the derogatory anti-Semitic rhetoric to Paro. The Zohar opens up this parasha with the pasuk Ketzam Lachoshech. It's a pasuk in Iyov, which literally means God put an end to the darkness. What is the darkness we're talking about? The darkness of Yosef being in the pit for 12 years. It was darkness in the pit. Ketzam Lachoshech. What Allah said, it's over. What's the message of this Zohar? Well, obviously it's over. It's over. Get some logic. What are you giving us a pasuk from Iyov? What's the shedding of light over here? So explanation is like this. In general, in life, people think that things happen through cause and effect. Example, if I were to ask you, a person went and found merchandise for a cheap price. So he went and bought the merchandise. Subsequently, he was able to sell it and make a great profit. So you say, the merchandise is the cause, and the effect is large profit. In Judaism, however, we don't look at it that way. We look at it the following way. Borei Olam in heaven decided that this man is supposed to make profit. So God is the cause. Which means it's not that the merchandise was the cause that affected profit. It's the opposite. God wanted you to make profit. Therefore, the effect is God found you merchandise, so you got it. The profit comes first. Same thing we'll say by Yosef. Most people will look at it, look at this. How did Yosef get out of jail? Because Paro had a dream. So Paro had a dream, he needed an interpreter. So as the cause was Paro's dream, and the effect was Yosef coming out of jail. No, it's the opposite. It starts off what? Yosef is told by God, your sentence is up. So Paro has a dream as a result that Yosef has to get out. It's not that Yosef's getting out as a result of Paro's dream. Paro's dreaming as a result of the sentence of Yosef being up. That means Ketzam Lahoshek. Borei Olam deciding your sentence is up. Once your sentence is up, okay, now Paro has to. It's the opposite. Exactly. Which is, well, those that believe in God, we don't believe in the causes. No, look at that, because I bought merchandise, I made money. And because I sold it, no. Borei Olam decided already what the outcome was. And because he decided the result, so now he puts the causes in order to bring the effect that already was decided. Ketzam Lahoshek. It started on Yosef's end, and therefore Paro is just a tool in order to bring about the Ritzon Hashem. Now, that being said, when Yosef comes out of the prison, the Pasuk writes, Vayiritzuhu min habor. Vayiritzuhu comes from the Lashon Ratz. Ratz means they rushed him. They didn't just take him out of the board. They were rushing him. Vayiritzuhu. The Mefarshim explained a similar concept. Were they rushing him? Because Ketzam Lahoshek. At the time that a person is supposed to be redeemed, he will not remain a second more in danger. And therefore, if he's supposed to be out of the jail at 122 and 36 seconds, he's not going to be in jail at 37 seconds. Which is, even to the second, it's measured. So therefore, they have to rush him out of the pit because he doesn't deserve any more moments in seconds. Which means there's a defined border, there's a defined line. Which means those that believe in God believe that everything is measured. Which means the person has to go to the doctor. If one guy has two shots and one guy has to take three shots, because the doctor couldn't find the vein the first three times, so don't think, bad luck, you know, you got a bad nurse. Nah. If they have to prick your vein three times, that's already designed by God. And if it was supposed to be two times, so it would have been two times. You shouldn't think of, if I would have got that nurse over there, and I wouldn't have had this. Everybody gets exactly what they're supposed to get to the second of pain. Therefore, Vayiritzuhu min habor. Now the Torah tells us that what? Vaygalah vayhalef simnotav. So he takes a shave. But she says, Lechmod HaMelech, in honor of the king. Of course, isn't that obvious? So that she's really coming to tell us, I do show me. Which day did Yosef get saved out of the bor? Rosh Hashanah. How do we know that? Because we learned last week that the butler and the baker had their dreams on Rosh Hashanah. If you remember, we said last week, if I'm not mistaken, that when the butler and the baker woke up, they were all despondent because of their dreams. They were in a bad mood. So what does Yosef tell them? Madua penechem na'im hayom. Why is your face down today? Because it was Rosh Hashanah. And the halakha says, on Rosh Hashanah, if a person is sad, that sets the pace for the whole year. If a person is angry on Rosh Hashanah, he has an angry year. If a person sleeps on Rosh Hashanah, his mazal sleeps, the Yerushalmi says. And therefore we eat sweet foods, we do things, simanim. So therefore Yosef sees them on Rosh Hashanah, no less. And what are you doing? Manua penekarim hayom. What are you talking about? Today is Yom HaShanah, Hedvat Hashem, Imahoshchem. And therefore, it says, 2 years from that day, Yosef was punished an extra 2 years for petitioning the Saddam Hashkim. So, it was two years later to the day. So it's Rosh Hashanah. So Yosef comes out of the pit on the holiday. Halakha says, you can't shave on Rosh Hashanah. But the Hiddush is what? Kavod Melachim. Kavod to the Melech, by Galach. So for me, you see what? That Pikuach Nefesh, you're going to walk into the king now with all... That's not Kavod either, to walk in like that. So therefore, he was allowed to shave on the holiday itself. Furthermore, he goes to the king, and the king tells him his dream. So what happens? Yosef gives the interpretation. He says what it means is there's going to be 7 years of plenty, hence the seven fat cows. There's going to be 7 years of famine that are going to follow, hence the seven lean cows. The fact that the seven lean cows swallowed the seven fat cows and didn't gain any weight shows that the seven famine years are going to be so severe that there's not going to be any trace that there was a plenty, just before. So it's going to be a serious situation. Yosef then continues to offer some advice. But before that, we see the greatness of Yosef when Paro tells him, "Ah, you're the Yosef. I heard about you. Shamati alecha. Tishma halom niftor oto. You're the guy that interprets dreams." Yosef right away reacts and says, "No, la biladai Elohim yaneh shalom paro. God will answer your dream." Now you got to put that pasuk in the right perspective, as we've said many times. Yosef now was just released from prison after 12 years. He has an audience with the king. This king certainly could put him right back at the prison with a snap. He could even kill him, by the way, with a snap of the finger. So the last person you want to upset is Paro. You certainly don't want to interrupt him. You certainly don't want to contradict him. And you certainly don't want to start talking religion with Paro, because Paro is an atheist. Paro's, the guy believes in himself as God. So Yosef breaks all three rules. Instead of walking into the palace and telling Paro, nice robe, you got a nice country going on over here, the prison system's phenomenal, Cairo's unbelievable, fall flower him a little, get on his good side. Yosef has such faith in God, he says, "Who's Paro? Paro's nothing. Borei Olam saved me from the board over here. I don't have to false flatter him. I don't have to kiss up to him. I could talk straight." So Paro comes along and says, "Oh, I heard about you." So he interrupts the king. He breaks rule number one. Rule number two, he contradicts the king. He says, "Bilhadai," he says, "You're wrong. It's not you. You're wrong. You said it's me interpreting dreams. It's not me. I don't interpret dreams. It is not I." Oh. And then he comes along and starts talking religion with him. He says, "Elohim yaneh shalom Paro." Oh, the worst thing you could do. You're telling Paro there's a God, meaning you're not God, Paro. There's a God in the world, his name is Elohim, and he answers dreams. Miracle of miracles, Paro not only does not kill Yosef, but at the end of the dream interpretation, for a moment, Paro becomes a believer. Because what does Paro say? Ahare odia lecha Elohim kol zeh. After God has given you such wisdom, you're the smartest guy. Oh, Paro is mentioning Elohim. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You got an atheist to mention God's name. What does that show you? That shows you that Yosef's nature was contagious. Which means Yosef was such a person, like many of the tzaddikim, when you're in the midst of a tzaddik, the tzaddik has the ability to elevate. Just his mere presence is a aliyah ruhani for everybody that's around him. Here Yosef, he's in the palace for 5 minutes, and he's got Paro already talking about Elohim. Keep in mind, this is the same Paro that said, "Mi Hashem Hashem Ishma Bekolo." This is the same one that says, "Who's God?" But for this moment over here, even Paro becomes a believer. That shows you Yosef's bitachon was rock solid. He didn't false flatter anybody. And his emunah actually rubbed off on other people. That's what we explained last week when he tells the butler and the baker, Madua Pinechim Na'im Hayom. What are you all upset about? What kind of question is that? I mean, what are we all upset about? We're in a dungeon. We're in a rat hole in Cairo. We're stuck in the... You think there was central air conditioning in the board? No, you think they had cable TV? Nothing. You're in a board over there. They didn't have no bathroom. They had nothing. They're living in an underground cesspool. So they wake up one morning upset. Well, you don't have a right to be upset in such a situation. You're not in the Waldorf Astoria. So he comes along. Hey, why are you guys upset? Explanation is that Yosef was never upset in the board. Because Yosef had tremendous betachon, and since the Sara Meshkim and the Sara Ofim were with him, his betachon was contagious. And therefore, if you were in Yosef's cell, you were in a good mood always. How? Because Yosef was positive, and Yosef was able to elevate everybody. So it was a novelty to see somebody upset in Yosef's prison cell. So he said, hey, what's going on with you? What are you all upset about? To show you the level of Yosef, and you see with Paro as well, that he was able to have a little influence over Paro, even for those few moments. In any event, after he gives him the dream interpretation, he starts to offer him some unsolicited advice. He said, well, Paro's got to, appoint a finance minister or a director of economic. And you know, you have to do this, you have to do that. And all the rabbis asked the same question. You know, who asked you for your advice? You know, you were hired over here as a dream interpreter. Now all of a sudden, Yosef, you know, elects himself to the cabinet. Now already he's starting to sit with him, giving him, do this, do that. Who asked you for your advice? You know, Paro should say, listen, man, the skelim is vote. Now I got the answer to the dream. So there's a few explanations to this. One explanation is a simple explanation as follows. Why did Paro not accept the other dreams? Yeah, he didn't like the other dreams. Because all the other dreams, there's no solution to them. You can have seven daughters, you're going to bury seven daughters. You're going to conquer seven cities, you're going to lose seven cities. There's no way out. They posed a problem to Paro. That's it. This is what it is. You're stuck. There's no answer. A person by nature cannot accept situations where there is no solution. Yosef comes along and says, 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. That also sounds like a situation where you're stuck. So therefore, for Paro to accept it, he's got to tell him, oh, this is different than all the other guys. Here, there's options. Oh, there's options. We can do this, we can do that, we can save during the years. So there's a way out. Paro says, this already I can accept. Because so it was necessary for Yosef to give the solution, because otherwise Paro would have told him, yeah, you're like everybody else. You're giving me stuff over here, you're just a bearer of bad news. I don't have an answer. And that's a great lesson that many times people in their own personal problems are not able to see a way out. And then, of course, a lot of times when a person is going through problems, they're so bogged down and they're so beside themselves, they can't think clear, so they're locked in. So the proper advice that can be tells is you got to go speak to somebody else. Says en havush matir atzmo mebet asurim. Somebody that's chained up, he cannot take off his handcuffs. He needs somebody else to take off his handcuffs. And therefore, when you go to somebody else, already he says, "Oh, what do you mean? You have this option. You have that option." So I didn't even see that. We're blinded to our own solutions. Here, Yosef was a third party. Came along and said, "This is what you're able to do," and they got out of it. And sometimes we cannot offer solutions. But listening to somebody's problem, that itself is half the solution. Which means you let a person unburden himself to you. He speaks it out, he gets it off his chest. At least you can be a good listener. That already, the person walks out feeling relieved, as if he got somewhere. So even if you're not a psychotherapist or some type of advisor, but everybody has the ears, Baruch Hashem. So you can listen, you smile, you nod your head for a half hour to hear the whole story, and already, if you don't come up with an answer right away, you definitely did a service to the person that had the issue. Another interpretation might be as follows. The advice that he gave him, Paro should appoint a manager over the land, that was part of the dream interpretation. That wasn't unsolicited, that was part of the dream. Because if you remember, how did Paro have his dream? He had it in two stages. It was the cow dream and then the wheat dream. In between, Paro woke up and then fell back asleep. How do you know that? Because it says it. Besides that, is there any other proof besides it says it? No, that's it, because it says it. Yatuf. In any event, so Yosef is analyzing, why did you have to have the dreams like that? Why couldn't you just have consecutive dreams? Why did you need two dreams at all? Basically it's the same dream times two. What, do you got to wake up in the middle and go back to sleep? So the explanation is like this. Which dream is worse? The cow dream or the wheat dream? Well, the cow dream represents a famine of meat. Well, famine of meat is not so severe. You have people that don't eat meat even in years of plenty. You have some of these vegetarians and these macrobiotic people. So meat is not considered a necessity item. It's a luxury. But what? Wheat already, when there's a famine of wheat, that's already, that's already serious. So you see, it's progressively getting worse. It went from cows to wheat. Now that being said, the message to Paro is, if you don't act, meaning when Paro wakes up in between the dream, what does the waking up symbolize? Do something. Wake up, Paro. Because if you go back to sleep and you involve yourself in inaction, it's only going to be worse. And therefore, you have to propel yourself into doing something. So therefore, what does Yosef say? Paro should appoint somebody to be in charge. Paro can't tell me. We ask you for advice. By the way, no one asked me for advice. That's your dream, by the way. What do you think you woke up in between? God's telling you, Paro, you got to wake up and do something, because if you fall back asleep, and it's only going to get worse, the famine. So therefore, it was not unsolicited at all. The last interpretation that we said for this was the opinion of Hakam Zati, Halav Shalom. If you look at the Pasuk, open up Perik Mem Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. This is where he gives him the advice. Ve'ata yere Faro ish navon ve'hacham v'ishiteu al eretz Mitzrayim. Paro should put an advisor. Ve'ata is now. And now Paro should make an advisor. Who said the word ve'ata? Simple explanation is Yosef said it. And now, appoint somebody. Chamizah says no. Mm-hmm. After Yosef tells him this is going to happen, that's going to happen, Yosef kept quiet. Mm-hmm. He was on a roll. He's giving him all the secrets. Mm-hmm. So Paro now all of a sudden turns to Yosef and says, "Data, now what? What do you mean? Wala, meaning what are we going to do now? You're just going to leave us hanging over here?" So now, you're asking already, I'll tell you. So therefore, Paro asks for the advice. And if you look at the Ta'amim, it makes sense. Because Ve'ata is a Kadma. Kadma is a pause. Ve'ata is a pause. Which means, somebody, no, exactly. Mm-hmm. Ashkenaz, they say no. And therefore, he answered back. The Ta'amim, it's Meduyekin like that. Okay, very nice. What happens after that? Yosef is elevated to become the viceroy. He's 30 years old when he becomes the king or viceroy of Egypt. Torah tells us how Yosef gets married in Egypt. This is a little who needs a little interpretation exactly. Because he had two sons in Egypt, Menashe and Ephraim. Who does he marry? Asenat bat Potiphera. So, I mean, not from the most miyuhas family. I mean, he marries Potiphar's daughter, Asnat. I mean, you're talking over here not a simple marriage only because Menashe and Ephraim came out of this over here. Now, Menashe and Ephraim have the status of Shevatim, you have to know that. So he picks up some Hasbis Shalom Egyptian girl Asnat by Potiphera Kohen On, and he marries her. How do you explain this? You know, what's the we're reading, right? So Bat Potiphera Kohen On, that's Potiphar. Potiphar's daughter. I mean, you couldn't find the bat. I understand, huh? What's up with the Egyptian girl? I was just good.
Give me a list, bro.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, Sam. Okay, there you go. You saved me a response. Beautiful. Now, the explanation is like this. So they said, now that it gives us the history, just to get the history once and for all. Asenat was actually the granddaughter of Yaakov Avinu. Okay, that's getting interesting. You remember when Shechem was involved with Dinah? Dinah got pregnant from Shechem. Dinah's daughter was none other than Asenat. Why was she called Asenat? Because somewhere down the line, fate had it that Asenat was evicted from a house, or she ran away, and she lived amongst the thorn bushes. Hence her name Asenat comes from the word Sene. I mean, she was like evicted. So she was living amongst
them. That's his niece.
Anything wrong with that?
No.
You don't know with that? Okay, it's okay, obviously. It's okay. You are sharp, don't say that. Okay. Didn't Amram marry his niece? Or Yocheved married her uncle? Amram's his aunt, that's better. Amram married his aunt, right? Yocheved was Amram's aunt. That's right, so it was a nephew. Yocheved married a nephew. Ah, Steve, very good question. Alright, so that's it, you got me. We're going to the next chiddush. That's it, you got me, I didn't realize that. We'll explain it. So, the explanation is like this. We'll delete, cut and paste this chiddush. The chiddush is like this. Before she went away, for some reason, Yaakov Avinu gave his granddaughter a piece of jewelry to wear around her neck, a necklace. And he says it had a kamiya in it. What type of kamiya? Who knows what type of shemot were written in it? So she was walking around with a kamiya. So now, fate had it that she ended up in Egypt. So you have a single girl, walking around with a necklace around her neck. So what happens? She ends up getting adopted by Potiphar. So when it says Bat Potiphera, it's not the daughter of Potiphera. He's the stepfather of Asenat. She's living by him. Now, how did she end up finding Yosef? Yosef was very handsome, it says. So when he came down to Egypt, all the ladies were throwing their jewelry at Yosef. Asenat doesn't have anything to touch, she just has this necklace. So she threw it. Somehow, again, fate had it, that necklace struck Yosef's eye. So he looked at it. He opens it up. He sees a mezuzah. He sees a kamiya. He says, oh, what is this? This is my father's handwriting. This is my father's kamiya over here. So right away, he said, that must be from my father's family. He investigates, and sure enough, he ends up marrying. So he ended up marrying his family. And therefore, Menashe and Ephraim's perfect. He married the only Jewish in the founder. Lesson we learned from over here is Nasib. You see over here, look what Borei Olam can do and does to bring two people together. Here, you have Yosef in Egypt. You say, who is Yosef going to marry? Yosef, he's living in, the worst place in the world, the Misraim, Ashitufezima, Ketohavot Misraim. Who's going to marry? And Yosef has to mean tribes, no less, in the world. Anybody that was taking a bet, even if you were the greatest shatkan, you'd say, Yosef, can't get married in Egypt. There's no girls out there. There's no girl like they tell you today. You're living in Brooklyn, where there's 300 Beit Yaakov schools, and there's 100 graduates every year from every school. And the guy goes to the shatkan. There's no girls out there. There's nobody out there. I say, what kind of answer is that? Here, Yosef is in Egypt. There's no Jews. And what? There was a girl out there. But Olam is a zivugim. Borei Olam brings a girl from Shechem, happens to get a necklace from her grandfather, happens to make her way down to Egypt, happens to be that she throws the necklace, happens to be that Yosef opens up that necklace. What does that show you? The miracle of marriage. That when Borei Olam wants to bring people together, he brings somebody from the north and somebody from the south, and all of a sudden they collide into each other and they get married. The miracle of Zivug. Nobody should think that, who am I going to marry? There's nobody out there. Nobody. If Yosef was able to find his Nasib in Egypt, then surely you could find your Nasib in Flatbush. And first, surely you could find your Nasib on Ocean Parkway. The odds of finding it are better here than they are in Egypt 2,000, 3,000 years ago. And that's what I was teaching you, the greatness of Borei Olam and how he's Mezaveg Zivugim.
Right, so this Bat Potiphar, that's the same Potiphar that Yosef
was
a slave in
the
house.
Right, right.
They
changed his name because he was
the first time. When he came the first time.
Correct. Right, this is the first time. What do you mean? He didn't come the second time.
No, before, but he was working.
Oh, before the jail, you mean? Yeah, before. No. He got married after. He got married after jail.
No, he got married after.
No.
The ladies threw the.
No, they always threw the jewelry at him. Well, no, he still was handsome before and after.
Before the pit.
Okay, before the pit, let's say. No.
They lived in the same house.
No. She could have come down after he left after the
house.
We don't know.
Could be
saw,
could be didn't.
When he was king already.
She was still just as handsome. I don't know if we know exactly. No, he wasn't married in jail. Yeah, he was in jail. They adopted a girl. Exactly. The years exactly. You could argue it out. Now,
right.
Who says this? The Sedal HaDerech. Who's the Sedal HaDerech? Okay. It's in the. No. I saw it in Sedal HaDerech. We have the book in the. Exactly. It's the difference. That's the hard part. Okay. Now we go to the next issue. Alright, let's go to the next issue. Where are we holding? They put the clock down. Is that a 10 to 9? Okay. All right, so we'll say a chidush legabe Hanukkah. Hanukkah today, Sam. Say one idea for Hanukkah. Usually, parashat miketz falls out on Hanukkah. Usually, maybe every year. I don't think there's even an exception on that.
Always.
Miketz and Hanukkah come together. If you look at the end of Parashat Miketz, there's a rabbi that does a great service for us. He tells us how many pesukim are in each parasha. Alright. What's the purpose for us to know how many pesukim in each parasha? It's trivia for the youth minyan. You give out tickets and stuff like that. You got, Kuf Mem Vav. So he tells us 146 pesukim in Parashat Miketz. Okay. And then he tells you that Tevot Alpayim Chafhe. He tells us, and you should know there's 2,025 words in this parasha. And this rabbi that did this service for us never tells us how many words there are in the parasha. Yeah, it's enough that he told us the pesukim. Here he goes out of his way and says, you should notice 2,025 words in the parasha. You see that, Jerry? You got it there? So the question is why? Why all of a sudden Parashat Miketz, you're giving me the number of words? Sire, what answer from Acham Baruch, Alav Shalom? But we'll say the answer that's Nogaya to Hanukkah. Oh, very good. Eight what?
Eight parashot that don't start with
Okay, so I'll explain to you. The word Ner is 250. Nun, Resh. You light eight Nerot on Hanukkah. Correct? 8 times 250 is what? 2,000. When do you start lighting? On the 25th of Kislev. So therefore, and the number of words in the parasha are 2,025. So therefore, he tells us specifically on this parasha in order to give you the illusion to Hanukkah. That's what you meant, Sam, no? Yeah, you understood that from him, right? The Vavs in the parasha. In any event, the explanation, they say like this. There's another connection between the parashot that we're reading, Miketz, by Yeshiv, and Hanukkah. This is set over by Rav Pam, alav shalom. Pam says a beautiful hadush. He says like this, we have a rule, comes from the Torah and parashat Vayelech. Ki lo tishakach mipi zaro. We have a guarantee. Just like the Jews will never be totally eradicated from world history, Torah also will never be eradicated. Which means there will always be Torah study, Torah learning, Torah scholarship. It'll never happen where there'll be a generation that is totally devoid of Torah. We have a guarantee. Now, doesn't mean that you can have the whole generation Tamid Acharim, but guaranteed, Torah will always perpetuate. There's never going to be a break in the Mesorah. There's never going to be a break in the link from Moshe Rabbeinu until Mashiach. Ki lo tishakach mepi zaro. But if you look at our history, we sure came close many times to Torah extinction. And if it wasn't for this beracha that kicked in of ki lo tishakach, it would have been over. For example, if you look at the way the Jewish people went down to Egypt, it's really a remarkable way. The whole Yosef story. He's there for 22 years. The brothers go down to Egypt because they need provisions. They meet him. They bow to him. A whole long route to eventually get Yaakov down to Egypt. Now, God in His infinite wisdom could have arranged the exile to begin in a much simpler way, seemingly. What's the end game? You got to get Yaakov to Egypt? There was a much easier way, and there was an opportunity. You remember when Yaakov went after the city of Shechem? So Yaakov says, hey, you jeopardized our standing amongst all the nations now. You put us in danger now. They're going to think we're a bunch of, military aggressors. Hey, we killed the whole city. They're going to come after us. You know what God could have done at that point? Oh, here's my opportunity. I'll let Canaan come against us. Where will we have to seek asylum? We'll go down to Egypt. We'll seek asylum in Egypt. And bingo, Yaakov's in Egypt with his family. I mean, the opportunity presented itself without having to go a 22-year-old story with the... you want to get us down to Egypt? Let's go. Shimon, let me set the table. There's a fight. Let Canaan come after us. We'll go down to Egypt. We'll make a deal with them. Klasna. But you know what the problem is? If we would have went down to Egypt that way, there would be no more Am Yisrael. There would be no more Torah. Because we would be beholden to the Egyptians for giving us asylum against Canaan. Now we're at their whims. We would be living with them. We would be assimilated. And slowly, slowly, the Torah of Yaakov Avinu would be lost forever. So what did Borei Olam do? To preserve Torah, he has to send Yosef down first. Why? Because he's got to become the viceroy. So when we come down, now Yosef can put us in Goshen. And not only that, we're able to come down and send Yehuda first to build the yeshiva. Yaakov did not go down to Egypt unless he built the yeshiva. So therefore, the Torah institution was established. You know that?
Yeah,
you know that now. Which means before Yaakov went down to Egypt, I can't go down to Egypt. I can't go down to Egypt. There's no yeshiva. So he sent his son Yehuda down first to build the yeshiva. Once the yeshiva was established, Yehuda sends my dad, we set up the kolel. Yeah, we got the coffee urn working. Okay, now come down. Oh, beautiful. So they come down to Egypt to the yeshiva. Now I ask you a question. If Yosef is not the viceroy, if Yosef doesn't have influence, if they go down to Paro on his terms, you think Yaakov could say, listen, we need asylum over here because the enemies are coming after us, but we're not accepting your protection if you don't give us a yeshiva. We're doing you a favor. You want to go start building a bunch of black hats running around Cairo now? Get out of here, go jump in the lake. Not interested. Which means God had to engineer it this way. Why? Because if it didn't happen this way, Torah would have been lost from Am Yisrael. Understand? No. Now, perfect. Beautiful.
On our terms.
Right. So we came down. Our brother was the king. Already Yosef was able to say, build all the yeshivas you want. We'll give you zoning. We'll give you tax, tax exemptions and all that stuff. Non-profit. And vouchers. And anyway, watch this now. Watch this. That's in the times of Yosef. No. Tubi. After. Ba'den. The explanation is like this. Later on in history, in the times of the first exile, we're reading about this now in the Navi. I'm getting up to it in the book of Melachim. The first exile, when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar and Sanhedrin, all those characters, Shaim, the Jews were exiled in two stages. There was the Galut of Yechoniah, where we were exiled from Israel to Babel. And then 11 years later, there was the second exile, Tzidkiyah, where the majority of the Jews, or the rest of the Jews, went down to Babel. Who was exiled in the first exile? So the Navi says, Heharash vehamasgir, the artisans and the gatekeepers. Gemara Gittin says, the artisans and the gatekeeper. You got a couple of, cultured artists, stuff like that. What is the Torah coming to tell us? Is the artisans. Says that these refer to the Talmidei Chachamim. The first exile was all the rabbis. Why were the rabbis exiled first? Because the Olam was concerned. If all the Jews would be exiled at one time to Babel, there's no infrastructure in Babel. There's no yeshivas. There's no Torah. We go to a foreign country. We're leaving the Torah centers of Eretz Yisrael. Now what happens? We'd be lost. In a matter of time, before we get our bearings, Christ would be already assimilated and lost. So what did God do in His infinite wisdom? Kilo teshakach Torah bepizar'o. He sends the rabbis down first to Babel. So we had an 11-year head start. What were they doing for 11 years? Yeshivas, kolelim, day schools. Now, when the exilees come down, already have a shul, yeshivat sura, yeshivat pumpedita. These yeshivas ended up becoming the eventual foundation for Talmud Bavli. But it had to happen that way. Because if it happens any other way, Am Yisrael becomes the void from Torah learning. That's in the times of the first Beit HaMikdash. Let's continue. In the times of the second Beit HaMikdash, I'm giving it to you historically, we reached that situation again. The Greeks, the Evanim, their intention was not to kill us. They had no intention to eradicate Jews. On the contrary, they wanted Jews. To them, Jews were an asset to the world. However, they wanted a Jew without Torah. They wanted to replace Torah with Hellenistic culture. Whatever that means, a gymnasium, worship of the body, physical, materialism, pleasure, all that stuff over there. That's what was to replace. And they came close, by the way. We say in the Mimim Atityahu that their intention was, l'shakeham toratach. That was their goal, to make Torah forgotten. And the Ramban writes, were it not for Matityahu and his sons, there would be no Torah today. If they would, which means there was not only the Greeks, but there was corroborators of the Greeks. Who were the corroborators of the Greeks? The Jews, the Hellenists. Which means the Hellenists, the Mityavnim we call them, they were a large majority. Most of the Jews became Mityavnim. There was only a small band of religious, people that were still studying. But it was just a matter of time where Am Yisrael would become lost in oblivion. There would be no Torah be Israel. So the Ramban says the war that Matityahu fought was not only, against Yevanim that were Mitameh the Beit HaMikdash. They were fighting the preservation of Torah. They were God's agents of the Pasuk Kilot Shakach Mepizaro. That's the celebration of Hanukkah, that the Torah was regained later on in history, in the times of the Geonim, after the Galut of Bavel, after the times of the destruction of the Second Temple, the academies in Bavel started to dwindle. There were four Geonim from Bavel. They took a fateful boat ride to go into the other countries. Where'd you get them? Hillel? So it says that they took a boat ride to go collect money for Bavel. The boat got pirated. Pirates. In the old days, pirates. So they hijacked the ship. I don't know if you call it hijack, lowjack. What do you call it on a boat? Whatever it is, they pirated the ship. The car. Oh, yeah, Jerry or Harry. Great. It's worth it for that word. They commandeered the ship. So now they take the ship, and now the rabbis are held for ransom. Who's on the boat? You have Rabbeinu Hushiel Gaon, Rabbeinu Moshe Gaon, Rabbeinu Shemariah Gaon, and the fourth was unknown. Who ransomed Rabbeinu Hushiel? The Jews of North Africa. The Jews of Morocco. They came along, they saw rabbis in trouble, they ransomed them. Now Rabbeinu Hushiel moved to Morocco. Rabbeinu Hushiel was the father of who? Rabbeinu Hananel. Rabbeinu Hananel is the most important mefaresh on the Talmud. And now what? The Jews of North Africa now started to build Torah. Rabbeinu Moshe Gaon, the Jews of Cordova, Spain, ransomed him. And therefore, he started to build the Torah of Spain, which eventually became the Golden Age. He had a student called Rav Nissim Gaon, who was the student, had a student called Rif, Rabbeinu Yitzhak Alfasi, who had a student called Rimi Migash, who eventually was the rabbi of the Rambam. So you see over here, Torah now moved from Bavel to North Africa. Torah moved from Bavel to Spain. And Rabbeinu Shemariah was ransomed by the Jews of Alexandria in Egypt. And therefore, three Torah centers now were created throughout the world. Once Bavel was starting to crumble, Boron had to protect the world for Torah. And therefore, those pirates were sent by God in order to now build Torah throughout. Kilo tishachach Torah v'pizaro. In our time as well, we have 6 million Jews or more living in America. Most of them, meaning close to 5.5 million of them, are either conservative, reform, modernized, secularized, or non-affiliated. Which means the large majority of the Jews today in America are Mityavnim. They are Hellenist, or Hellenized, or you want to call it Americanized, but it's the same story. And even amongst the 500,000 that check off Orthodox as their affiliation, how many of them are still practicing Jews, meaning learning Jews? Orthodox means you pray in an Orthodox synagogue. Doesn't mean you come to the Daf Yomi every day. It doesn't mean that you learn Torah. It means you're Orthodox. You go pray once a week into the Orthodox synagogue, you pay your dues to an Orthodox shul. So out of those, how much are actually learning? So we might be considered Matityahu and his children of the generation which means if Torah is not going to be forgotten, it's because of a small band of Jews like ourselves. So our responsibility is not merely we're learning Torah for ourselves. What are you talking about? Our learning is an inyan of preservation. She's on us, the pasuk, lo teshakam pizaros, being fulfilled. We are like the small pach shemen, that little pure olive oil that was found with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. We are that small pach shemen, that little bastion of purity amongst a world full of contamination, of mityavnim, of self-appointed Jews that speak on our behalf. We didn't appoint them, they elected themselves. All the different spokesmen that come along and espouse our opinions. It's not toward our Judaism. And therefore, Hanukkah is a time to redouble our efforts in the study of Torah, to recognize our responsibility, not only to ourselves, but what we're doing for Klal Yisrael. If Torah is not going to be forgotten, it's because of the few thousand Jews in America that still are loyal to the study of Torah. Amen. It's not enough, Rabbi Gifter always would say, to be an Orthodox Jew. He's an Orthodox is a Greek terminology. You have to be a Torah Jew. Torah Jew means that you learn. If there's learning, then Am Yisrael has preservation. And for us to celebrate the holiday of Hanukkah, it means to accept upon ourselves what Matityahu wanted, and not to succumb to what the Greeks wanted. The Greeks wanted Jews to walk around with a yarmulke. They didn't care with the yarmulke. Why not? What the Jews wanted is walk with the yarmulke into the gymnasium all day. Walk with the yarmulke into the theaters. What? Become a secularized Jew. What the yarmulke? Just don't. Not with the Gemara, because they know once you have a Gemara in your hand, finished. A little light pushes away a lot of darkness. Therefore, we mustn't let the American version of Yavan come along and strip us of our most important commodity, Torah. Shemen Zayit Zach must remain pure. And just like Borei Olam redeemed us in the times of the Yevanim, by the hands of Matityahu, Sha'asa Nisim Avotenu Bayamim Ahem, Bazeman Azeb, Borei Olam will also redeem us from this exile as well. Uba Nisiyon Goel, Amen.